Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak, live in the studio. Frank Fats on L Street in Sacramento opened in 1939. It became legendary for its Chinese-American cuisine and an amazing banana cream pie. Oh, but if those walls could talk. That restaurant is just two blocks from the state capitol. It became so popular and so important to people in government, politics, and business that you might have heard it referred to as the third house, meaning the third house in the California legislature. Frank Fat died in 1997, but the business continued, and in August, the family threw an 80th anniversary party for the restaurant. There were past governors, political leaders, including Willie Brown, lobbyists, longtime friends, and tourists joining the celebration. Yesterday, we talked with Lena Fat. She's a pioneer in her own right. And we started the conversation on the subject of banana cream pie and how Frank Fat started that tradition.
His client said, "Frank, I love Chinese food, but I cannot, eat Chinese food every meal," because in those days, the legislature stayed in Sacramento like at least 5 days or 4 or 5 days. So that's how Frank started the, steak Frank style and very fried chicken and all that. Then they turned and said, "Frank, we don't eat Chinese desserts. What do you have?" So Frank asked his chef and to come up with some idea. So he came up with the banana cream pie. And so all these years, they had the banana cream pie. When we did the celebration for Frank's 70th birthday, I think that was in 1984, and the remodeling, and I changed the pie crust because they were still using the lard, the old-fashioned way for the crust. So I just gave them a new French pastry crust. That was the only thing changed. The banana, the custard, they were all from almost 80 years old.
Tell me about the recipe, and do you have any idea how many pounds of bananas it takes?
Oh, well, one pie takes 1.5 pounds.
Of bananas. Hmm. Okay. So that's a lot of bananas.
It's a lot of bananas.
Week in, week out, all year long.
Yes, and 2 layers of custard. And it's not too sweet, so it's
right.
Just right for after dinner, just have a little bit of sweetness. And it's, well, healthy for you, too, with the banana, not the cream or the custard.
So the banana cream pie tradition goes back almost to the beginning of the restaurant?
Almost the beginning.
The late Frank Fat was your father-in-law.
Yes.
There are people, it's hard to imagine, but there are people who wouldn't have been able to meet him or know him and know how colorful and warm a person he was. How was he with you? How do you describe him?
Well, he was very good to me. But in Chinese tradition, we respect the elders, So, yeah, he would talk, but he doesn't talk that much. But especially, in the old days, there is very male dominance. So they usually talk to the son more so than the daughters or the daughter-in-law or like that. But I came from a family. I was the only child. It didn't matter to me. I talked to him. And he was a wonderful person. Mm. Very, very kind-hearted. And he really took care of his people in the kitchen. That's why he has so many people working for him through 30 years and all that. He's a very, very good person.
When you became master chef and you were cooking more and developing restaurants and exploring food, did he talk with you about food, about the recipes and the ingredients?
Not really, but I always run by the family and make sure everybody liked the recipe before I wrote it up. So in the beginning, when I did the Chinatown menu, it was the approval of the whole family. That's why it was doing so well, because the family, they all, you know, very good in eating and cooking. They know very well. So when I pass, you know, there, you know, get their approval, you know, it's almost perfect.
China Camp was the brand new restaurant the family was going to open. And there was, how does the story go? The guys were trying to come up with a menu and you jumped in and offered suggestions or said that you would put together a menu?
Well, they were looking at menus. They couldn't decide because Frankfurt is too close to old Sacramento. And then in those days, the popular menu was like a buffet, you know, and we didn't want to do a Chinese buffet. So then they were going to, you know, give back the land, sell it back to old Sacramento. And I told my husband, I said, you know, it's a very good concept because my father-in-law thought about that first. He wanted to open a restaurant and he named it China Camp. He wanted to commemorate the Chinese immigrants, you know, to the United mm-hmm. States. Mm-hmm. Since I was an immigrant too, from Hong Kong, you know, so I said, why not do something that we do at home? Because in those days, I stopped being a pharmacist and I became very much into cooking. I love the creativity of cooking, you know, so, and I did a lot of things kind of combined because I came from Hong Kong. And, you know, Hong Kong has very good food. So, and what I brought out, people like it. So I told the family, I said, why not this way? So they like it. So that's how I started writing down menu and went through the recipe and went through the whole family approval.
I'm talking with Lena Fatt. She actually was working in her career as a pharmacist when this opportunity came up to step in and talk about the menu for China Camp, the restaurant that the family opened in Old Sacramento. And that changed everything for you, didn't it?
That changed completely everything because I didn't expect to be in the restaurant business. I thought I just developed the recipe and another chef could take over. But when, I guess, the week before we opened, my brother-in-law, Wing, would assign duties to the family, who's going to do what. When it came to me, and he said, oh, you're in charge of the kitchen. I said, oh, okay. And I'm the type that like challenges. So I said, okay, I'll do it.
And then you quit your job at that point, the other job?
Oh, yeah, the pharmacy. I was already doing part-time and also relief work because I was a little disillusioned with that because I was like the pioneer in getting doctor of pharmacy degree. I think I was the third year or something, you know, to get the doctor's degree.
As a woman?
As anybody. And after I finished, I tried to work in different pharmacy environment, and I couldn't find any physician calling us and asking our opinion. So I said, you know, what am I doing? Doing 6 years to get a doctor's degree and pushing pills? I was not very happy. But of course now, completely changed now. Mm. So I'm very happy for the pharmacists now. They do a lot of prescribing and it's very, very good right now.
Can you tell me the story of your late father-in-law finding the location on L Street, the place, and what that little spot was near the Capitol across the street from the Greyhound bus depot?
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing I admire my father-in-law was his persistence and try to do better. Because when he came, he didn't know a word of English and he didn't have enough education. He came and the only job he got was a dishwasher. And one time he didn't even have a place to stay. And he had to, you know, sleep. Now they call it homeless, but, you know, down there. And he worked hard and he pulled himself up, and his cousin owned that restaurant and gave him the opportunity to start, you know, as a waiter and all that. And he, because of his personality, everybody liked him. Then one day, one of the maybe a legislature lobbyist or somebody who came to the restaurant quite often and liked Frank as the waiter. And there was a lottery at that time, and the customer say, gave him some money. He said, why don't you get me a few lottery tickets? So he did. Then one of the tickets won. And it was, I forgot how much it was now. It was significant amount of money in those days. And then he, this fellow left and haven't come back for quite some time. But Frank held on to the money, to the ticket. And when this fellow came back, he handed him the money and the lottery ticket. So this person was so impressed with Frank's honesty, because anybody can just cash it in and nobody would know, right? But he kept it for this person. So this person loaned him the money and opened that restaurant over there. The location was not very good at that time. And some of his friends said, Frank, why are you opening the restaurant over there? Even the dogs don't go there. So, but Frank, you know, being very, very hardworking, he said, I'll make it work. And he worked very hard and developed that up to now.
80 years.
Yes.
What is it for the family to realize that from that opening in 1939, this restaurant has endured and grown for 80 years?
Right. And my husband, I think they opened right after my husband was born. So my husband, Ken, he's a second boy. He just turned 80. So we have a family celebration for him, too.
Both houses of the legislature celebrated this 80th anniversary. So let's listen to a little bit from the Senate President Pro Tem Tony Atkins, who is also a fan of dessert at Frank Fats.
How many of us had banana cream pie for breakfast? Yes, I did. It was there. We love Frank Fats, and we're proud to commemorate the 80th anniversary. But for me, I want to take it a little further south, if I may. The Fat family legacy also has a connection to our community, and thanks to the tireless work of Tom Fat, one of Frank's sons. With the original Frank Fats thriving on L Street, Tom ventured to San Diego in the 70s to expand the family's business. He came to the rescue of an iconic, bright pink Art Deco building on the Pacific Coast Highway that had once been home to the 1940s nightclub hosting legends like Nat King Cole and Shelley Winters. Tom turned it into two restaurants, Fat City and China Camp, a twofold treasure that re-energized the downtown San Diego restaurant scene.
That was California Senate President Pro Tem Tony Atkins. That was a big move. Was it also a big risk for the family to have Tom open two restaurants in San Diego?
Yeah, it was a new adventure. And Tom was very good in looking for new things to do. He also very innovative. So he's always on the outside taking care of that. And I was in the background doing the menu. Actually, I designed the kitchen when we first remodeled the building to be able to do two restaurants in the kitchen and then separate the prep area into, you know, for two restaurants. And it was a lot of fun. I enjoy that.
You opened a location later that's very popular, the Bistro location in Folsom. And that was, again, a little different kind of thinking about people and food, correct?
Yes, and then it's a little bit different because not only they both have the Chinese food, but they also have the other food from the other Asian countries. So that makes it a little bit more interesting.
How are these meetings when the family would get together to try to make a big decision about making a change or adding a restaurant. How did that go?
Oh, a lot of discussion. Yeah, but usually we try to, you know, be friendly with the family without, you know, breaking up the relationship. Because we have seen a lot of families, you know, can be very different when they argue about business. So we try to respect each other. And so that helped.
Did you feel that you always had a voice, a strong voice in the group? And did that grow with other younger women as they came into the family and took roles in the business?
Well, there are not that many younger women came into the restaurant business. But I had a strong voice because, like I said, I was the only child at home. And I make all my decisions in Hong Kong. So I wasn't afraid or intimidated. So when I felt that something is right or not right, I spoke up. But one thing good about the family is, like I say, we try to respect each other's opinion, and so that we will still have the right relationship, a good relationship between all of us.
I think the restaurant wouldn't have endured if the food and the quality of the food and the ingredients hadn't been so good, true, no matter what the location.
Exactly. That's what it is about. This is a hospitality business. In a restaurant business especially, it's all about food, service, entertain your customers, make sure they have an enjoyable experience. That's the main thing. You know, just like you go out to eat, you want to have the same experience. So just think about that if you're going to invite people to come to your home, what do you expect? And this is how we should treat the customer. And when you can do that, they love to come back.
Let's listen to more of the recognition that happened in 2019. This is from the other house of the California legislature. We're going to hear California Assemblyman David Chu.
Frank Fats holds many stories of our Capital community, many political luminaries, including every single California governor since Earl Warren, have dined here since it opened in 1939. This institution was part of an era where deal-making often took place between meals involving legislators and folks outside of this building. Perhaps the most famous deal brokered at Frank Fats was the legendary napkin deal that resulted in tort reform.
Can you tell the napkin story?
Well, that was way before my time, but that was very typical in those days. You know, whether they were Republican or Democrat, they would come to Frankfurt. They left all the argument on the floor. They would come and eat and talk and drink together, so they can come to a conclusion what is right, you know, for the legislature. I think that's a very good way to do it. And besides, you talk about, you know, what's in Las Vegas, stay in Las Vegas. Frankfurt was in Frankfurt, stay at Frankfurt. So people, you know, didn't mind talking openly because nobody could say anything.
Do you have a favorite story that you tell about something that happened in the restaurant?
There are lots of stories. Like Duke Majan came and
Former Governor George Duke Majan lunched
with us at Fast City. So that time I did a Duke burger for him. I make a lamb burger. Mm-hmm. I asked him, I said, may I call it the Duke burger? And he said, okay. So that's what I did too.
Lena, in the 1980s, you, along with Biba and Ettore and David Berkeley, you became celebrities because you were cooking on TV, you were writing cookbooks, you had restaurants. Are you continually recognized? Do people continually want to talk to you about food and your family and the restaurants and their memories?
Oh, yeah. Biba and I were very good friends. Before we went into the restaurant business, we used to play tennis together. And her daughter And my daughter, we used to put them in a playpen right outside the tennis court, and we would go in and play tennis. That was the most enjoyable time. And then, of course, we both went into restaurant business, and that got us very busy. But he was my dear friend. She was my dear friend. I really enjoy her.
I think that all of you changed what was happening with food in Sacramento. And now as you look around and see the explosion of restaurants and flavors and cuisines, what are your thoughts as you try to think about what food is doing in this region?
It's very good because, now in Sacramento, we have so many different types of chefs and talented chefs coming in and open the restaurant and do farm to fork and all that. I think it's fantastic. And I think this year they're going to have all women chefs to do the, the bridge dinner. I think that's very much a quick step forward. I'm glad that I got to see that.
Thank you for being here, for sharing your memories and being so generous through the years with your family's time and experience, and of course the restaurant always being open to everyone in every way.
Yes, and thank you for asking me. I really enjoyed those years doing new news, recipes at Channel 3 when you were there.
We did work together a long time ago.
Long time ago. And I still treasure those times. It was a good memory.
Thank you, Lena.
Thank you.
Our very best wishes to Lena Fatt of the legendary Frank Fatt's restaurant in Sacramento, her friend, Italian chef Biba Caggiano, who opened the legendary Biba's restaurant, died in August. Frank Fatt's, by the way, won a Michelin Award in 2019, a James Beard Award in 2013. As for that napkin story, we've posted a link to a column by James D. Patterson that explains it. It's at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Cap Radio.
Sleeves have come unstitched from climbing your tree. When dogs laugh, some say they're barking, but don't think they're mean. Some people get so frightened, the fences in between. Tree to tree.